Let me start by saying how, what I understand statistical inference to be about, and why it's, in some sense, a hopeless project. But it's the best, I mean, we have to make do with what we can do. So that's my general take on statistical inference. There is no really objective method, fully objective method. That's why, for example, the Bayesian approaches, it's made explicit by having to choose a prior. In other approaches, it's made it's hidden, it's implicit, and it's hidden in the choice of which statistics you look at, or how, as I would say, how you lump things. It came up, of course, why is it relevant here? It came up in Nosikiwa's talk, where he said, okay, we got one of our realizations was a good fit, or five of them, or whatever it was, 10 of them are a good fit. Should we be happy with that, or should we say, no, it's terrible because, you know, 90% of them were not a good fit. So what is the criterion? In that particular case, the thing that was suggested was, well, which is the plot that Nosikiwa showed, what was suggested is that if the the good fits were typical of our model, then that's positive for the model, and we should be satisfied with that. Whereas in that model, because it has a random seed, if you wait long enough, you'll generate lambda CDM. I mean, you'll generate a completely constant dark energy, and it'll fit as well as lambda CDM. If you happen to generate also, wait a little longer and generate the exact favorite value of lambda day today. So your theory, because it's stochastic, it can certainly fit the data. And so what's the difference? I mean, one difference is that you didn't have to wait. I mean, the difference you can point to is that in order to generate lambda CDM, you'd have to wait immensely longer, exponentially longer, than you did to get these good fits. And that was quantified in that graph she showed with the chi-squared theory. And in words, what it's telling you is that lambda CDM, although in principle it could come out as a realization, it's a very atypical realization of your theory, your model in this case. Whereas the actual ones that came out that were a good fit were in some sense typical. If you could objectify the criterion of typicality, you could say, well, this is 0.7 typical.
Quantify. Objectify doesn't sound like
it. No, I mean
make
that,
objective.
I mean, no, I actually mean
make objective.
I don't mean object to. No, I meant
objectify, it means something else.
What does it mean? No, I mean objectify. I mean, if you could give an objective, maybe I don't mean objectify, but I mean more than quantify.
It's more than quantify.
More than quantify. I mean, give an objective criteria for when something is typical. What does objectify mean then, if it doesn't?
It means to make an object of something in a derogatory way.
Okay, so how do I?
It's
not a good thing if you do it with your family member or something. It's a good thing for
this
make
subject.
Make it objective.
If you could give an objective criterion for when a particular realization was typical, then you would be able to bypass this. You know, you would hope for some quantitative measure of how good your theory did. I think that's never going to happen, because if you could give an if you could give an objective measure of typicality, it would mean that you would understand probability theory in general. Because probability theory in general, when you say you have a probabilistic theory of something, what you're really saying, like flipping coins, you know, what you're really saying is that I think the real world will turn out to be typical for that, a typical realization of that model, and not an atypical one. So it becomes, you would then get you would give a precise meaning to probability, and that just looks hopeless, I think. But anyway, whether or not it's hopeless or isn't hopeless, that's the magnitude of the difficulty. If you can define typicality, then you can define probability in general. So this is what ultimately is, I think, what statistical inference is struggling with. So you make some sort of, so what do you usually do? You can see it with coin flips, or you can see it there in the Nosy-Biewicz example. You have a particular realization, particular reality, real world, and you say, is this typical from the point of view of our model? And the way you do it, the answer is, no, it's very, very atypical, because that's built in. If you flip a coin many, many times, the probability of getting exactly that sequence of heads and tails is just negligibly small. So what you always do is you lump together, you say, well, I'm not going to look at every detail, I'm going to look at something, like the fraction of heads. What that means practically is that you lump together a large number of the outcomes, and you say, if it falls in this, then it's typical. Okay. But who's to tell you how to lump them together? That's somehow the mystery. So if you lump them in a different way, you'll get it's atypical or it is typical. So people from experience have developed ways. So like use chi-squared or something like that, like we did in our model. You use the likelihood itself as a measure. So, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but I just want to say that's kind of the problem that you're facing now. As far as I know, there are two approaches to statistical inference. The so-called frequentist approach, is that the name?
Mm-hmm.
It's frequentist approach and the Bayesian approach. Frequentist approach has, I think, the advantage that...
No prior.
Well, it certainly has that advantage. It has no prior, and it can also tell you... It's more, in that sense, objective. And it can also tell you that a theory is no good, whereas a Bayesian approach, I think, can only tell you. You could say, well, this is just too unlikely for this. This is so atypical from the theory. Of course, we know that that's a subjective notion. But once you decide how you measure typicality, you say, this is so atypical for my theory, the data was so atypical that we just have to rule out the theory. The Bayesian approach doesn't seem to even have that possibility. It seems to have the possibility to say, well, this theory is much better than this theory. But to say objectively whether it's a good fit or not a good fit doesn't seem possible in the Bayesian approach. So, I don't know. So they both have strengths and weaknesses. But to my mind, the Bayesian one is a more logically coherent system. Because it sort of, although it has this weakness of allowing you really only to compare theories, at least it shows you clearly where the subjective feature comes in, which is in the choice of prior. So I suspect that's why everyone, at least in cosmology, everyone seems to now use a true, if it's a true statement. It's kind of taken over, basically. Does anyone use any other? I don't know the story. That's my impression, anyway. So when I wrote that paper that I gave you, I don't think it was the case. But there was hardly any cosmology done. I mean, there wasn't enough data. I don't think people using statistics in various fields didn't specifically favor Bayesian. But I think there's been, since then, kind of growth in success of the Bayesian approach. So now the particular paper that I wrote could be viewed as, I should say a little bit about Bayesian, but Levon actually, I mean, he had it on the slide there. But maybe I should review how the Bayesian approach works and what the weakness is.
So I should Alejandro's talk is in 14 minutes. So.
Yeah, I should have done. So, weaknesses in the choice of prior. What I was doing could be viewed from a Bayesian point of view as trying to give a universal choice of prior, objective in the sense that you don't have to choose it. For example, you've tried to make it objective in a certain sense, in another way, certain tests of when a prior is functioning well, or certain guidelines of how to choose priors using correlation functions, whatever. But this was meant to make a different choice of, make a kind of prior choice prior that, if you don't look too closely, will work in all situations and is based on the idea of complexity. So let me state. Let me just state the criterion, and you'll see it'll look very similar to some of the expressions that Levon had. What the conclusion is, and then I'll give you, not the starting point, but I'll give you the Bayesian language for it. But the idea is that we have data. I'm controlling myself not to complain about this idea that there's a sharp distinction between data and theory, because that's a big mistake in my view that people make. But anyway, I'm controlling myself, so I won't. So let's assume that we have a clear distinction between data and theory. We have data, we have theory. And we have what I'll call the information in the data given the theory, which is, I'll probably get the sign wrong, or something like that, but it's the log minus, as I said, I'll probably get the sign wrong. Someone tell me what the right sign should be, but it's the log of the probability of the data conditioned on the theory. It's
like the chi-squared.
You multiply by it's a factor of two, if you want chi-squared or something like that. But it should be thought of as the part of the data that's not explained by the theory. If I got the sign right, which I probably didn't, it's a positive number. And if the theory told you nothing at all, then the probability would be a small number of the data, and then minus the log of the, I guess the sign is right here. It would be a large thing. So it's the unexplained amount of the data, that's the idea, the information.
So you think a bad theory has a large I?
A bad theory has a large I, right? It's the information remaining in the data. And then now what we want to do is we want to choose the theory to minimize this expression. That's the idea. But we can do that by making a completely stupid theory. Our theory could just be a lookup table for the data. That would be a perfect theory. It would set the information remaining in the theory, and the data would be zero, but no one would believe this. So how do we... This basically, minimizing this is just saying minimize chi-squared or something like that. That's the best theory. We know that that's not right. We know you can introduce many more parameters and get the theory to be perfect, and you don't believe the theory. So you have to make some compensation for the number of parameters that you've introduced. And so the idea is that there's another thing, which is the information in the theory. To the extent that we can define this, we can define something that I'll call the information, the joint information of the data and the theory taken together, which is the sum of these two things. The idea is that this is what we should minimize. And again, in the Bayesian approach, we'll get some number. What it means, I'm not sure. But if we want to compare two models, we can take the difference between these information for the book, for both of them, and we can say that the one, how much better the one model is than the other model.
This is exactly the Bayesian approach. So.
This is so far the same.
So I'm saying, yeah, so I'm saying that it fits. I mean, in my paper, I gave a different rationale for it, but it completely fits within the Bayesian.
So it's the complexity part that is...
So the,
where does that come?
Yeah, so the whole question is how do we measure this, or how do we evaluate this for a given theory? Now, the idea was to use... This is another word, like you said, is complexity. Yeah, I mean, I tried in the paper to give some arguments involving entropy. Actually, I did that because I submitted it to a statistics journal and they wouldn't accept it. So I submitted it to a physics, so I thought if I'm sending it to a physics journal, I should have something physics, so I put some. So I came up with a rationale for this. But any Bayesian would look at this and say, yeah, this is very familiar, this is fine. And this, the choice of this IFT is what the Bayesians call the prior. So the idea behind my paper was that prior should be a measure of the complexity. The more complex, the higher entropy is. The more complex that the theory is, the more information in it, because it takes more to describe the theory. And so that's what you want to compensate. By adding these together, you can see that there's a certain consistency, because if you sort of had a partial lookup table, and if you transfer the information from this lookup table to the theory, then you'll see that the sum won't change. So that's a consistency condition, if you like. I'm making a sum, you know, why not twice this or half this, or something like that. Anyway.
So in other words, you increase the complexity.
Yeah, you increase it by just the right amount so that...
So you would reduce the matching. So okay,
that's it. Yeah, that's right. No theory and having... I'm not saying it clearly. But anyway, so the important thing is, how do we define this? And the idea was, we model the theory as a Turing machine. This is the conceptual idea. What in practice we can actually do is much less. That's fortunate, there's only 5 minutes to say what. But the idea is to model the theory as a Turing machine. So it's also a T for Turing machine. In other words, it's a program. It's a computer program in Lisp. Or it may be in Pascal or whatever language people are. A program, that has a very clear complexity. You just count the number of bits in the program, and that gives you the theory. Now the theory,
maybe you were just about to go on to say more about how the theory.
Well, this guy, I'll just cut to the chase. There's a whole theory of this theory called Kolmogorov complexity, or Kolmogorov something, Solomonov. Anyway, there's a whole theory of trying to understand, define randomness using this notion of complexity based on the Turing machines. Unfortunately, there's also a theorem that says that this is not computed. The complexity of any program is not computed. It's not computable. There's no algorithm that'll compute it. It's one of these theorems, like the non-existence of the Turing machine, that'll solve the halting problem for Turing machines. So it's one of these Gödel type things. So there is no algorithm that can do it. Given any particular program, you may be able to study it enough and work out ultimately its complexity, but it's a very long process. There's no known way.
Right, you just count the number of bits in the program.
That's right. But you want to take all programs that are equivalent to that. I should have said that. The complexity of the program is the number of bits, but the complexity of the theory, Siri is not a single program, it's a class of programs. It's all the programs that will compute the function that the Siri needs to compute, which in my the way I was thinking about it, what it needs to be able to compute is this, the probability of the data.
But why don't you just take the simplest program?
That's exactly what you, that is the definition. So the complexity, well, it's one definition.
Is it just?
You just take the complexity as the number of bits in the simplest probe, the shortest probe that will compute it. And that's the thing that for which there is no algorithm to work out what it is. So what I did was throw away a lot of this, keep only one aspect of the complexity of the program, which was the parameters. So whatever the program may be doing, if the theory has parameters in it, then whatever the program may be doing, it should have those access to those parameters. Unless there's some very clever compression algorithm that will compress the parameters. So all it needs, the basic thing is it just needs to store the parameter. If it has a parameter, if it needs access to a parameter, just store it in the most obvious way, in the computer memory. And then you can just, so the complexity is just the total number of bits that you keep in the parameters. And then, so that's a lower bound to the complexity because there's more in it. You need to do something with the parameters, but at least this part you can quantify fairly well. And then you can ask how many bits do I need to keep in order that this should go down. In other words, if I keep, it's kind of similar to what we were saying before. If there's a true value of the parameter, but the data is noisy, there'd be no point whatsoever in keeping all these higher decimal digits. You won't improve your fit. So you keep only as many digits in the parameter as is justified in order to, that this sum, where this is now approximated by the number of bits in the parameters, should be minimized. If you do that, you'll see you remarkably, maybe it's somehow secretly built in, but I don't see that. You'll see that you get the standard notions, the uncertainty in a single random variable will be roughly the standard deviation if it's a Gaussian random variable. You'll see that the number of bits you should keep is just enough so that you'd specify the parameter within the standard deviation. So that's an illustration. And then I tried to, for just one random variable. And then the other thing I did in that paper is I considered, like more like what we see here, a curve fitting. So you have two theories like this W or this X, and you have two, you have, again, it's Bayesian, and it has this proper, you can only really use this to compare models, because we don't have the absolute normalization for this Turing machine probability. But you can compare a model in which there are no parameters except one constant, one mean. It's a model that has more parameters. And then you can just ask how much better. I mean, now with Monte Carlo, you could do it much more, I think, more accurately. But I worked out an approximation to the difference between this for the theory one. So I should just quit now. So we have I of dt for theory one minus I of dt for theory two. That's a measure of how much better theory one is than theory, or worse theory one is than theory two. I worked out an approximation for that, and that result was that it contains the usual chi-squared, and then it contains another term which depends on the number of parameters and the number of data points, in which a large number of parameters, if there's k parameters, or maybe it was k minus one, and n data points, it scales for large n like k log n. And for small n, it's some fairly messy algebraic expression. The idea is to use that rather, I mean, the idea is that is the test you can use to compare theories, rather than, for example, integrating over the parameter space and so on.
But this is like AIC, except that it doesn't have log n in it, AIC. So you're, I guess, your question is.
This looks like improvement in generalized chi-square. It's like looking at the open chi-square, but chi-square would be now the logarithm of the posterior instead of the logarithm of the bucket.
Yeah, that's right. But the thing, you're not doing the full integral here, right?
Yeah,
yeah, but that's right. But the prior, this is a particular ansatz for what the prior it should be.
So basically, you're saying if you have lots of data, then you get more penalty for adding parameters. Right? So that's
true. That's
a bigger number.
You get a bigger number. It's only logarithm. Yeah, that's right. This is only the asymptotic form.
Yeah.
Spine idea, and there's a more complicated
so
expression.
A bigger number IP, hoping to make ID
exactly
RT smaller.
That's right.
And then you look at the improvement in sum.
Yes.
Or the reduction of the sum.
Yeah, that's right.
That's. And how do you quantify significance? Suppose you get a difference. How do you have a sense in which you could say this?
When would you say it's hardly worth considering?
Yeah.
Or
is that a map?
The only thing I know is that you can, of course, convert this into a probability ratio. That's what people usually do. So my feeling is that there's enough slop in the derivation that unless this is bigger than 5 or 6 or something, that you can't take it seriously. If you could do everything absolutely, because I'm throwing things under the rug, like how, when you talk about the parameters, do you start the parameter or the square of the parameter, or what's the?
So I think it's if you want a break for that, by the Alejandro's talk tomorrow, this is a good time. You're already 5 minutes late. Okay, so everybody okay? Sorry, I think
yeah.
I guess we got the idea, but
did you want to go to that seminar?
What is the seminar?
What is it?
Topic of the seminar?
It's exactly, it's dark energy from discreteness of space time.
Oh, I see. I'll watch a little. I'm not sure I may want to best.
Okay, I'm good.